This stranger over here with the short dark hair is keeping me in line. I don't know who it is, but I'd like to welcome you all out to the Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting tonight. My name's Robert Burns, and I'm the chair. We'll start with our introductions over here.
I'm Jim Gaskill from South Weber, and I represent the public at large.
Paul Cowley, I represent the Forest Service.
Craig Van Tassel from Camas, I'm a sportsman.
John Blazard from Camas, representing agriculture.
John Leonard from North Ogden, representing sportsmen.
John Wall from Riverdale, public at large.
Russ Lawrence from Ogden, public at large.
Bryce Thurgood Perry, at large.
R. Jeffrey Hicks, at large.
Kristen Purdy from Ogden, non-consumptive.
Justin Doling with the Division of Wildlife Resources. I'm the executive secretary, and I serve as a non-voting member.
And I represent the public at large, and I live in Centerville. I'd like to recognize Bill Fenimore here in the front row, member of the Utah Wildlife Board and lives in the northern region. If you'd please join me in turning off your cell phone ringers, we could try to have an uninterrupted meeting. John, go ahead and introduce yourself.
John Cavett, non-consumptive.
John is the vice chair. The purpose of the Regional Advisory Council is to gather input from the public concerning wildlife management policy rules and regulations. The council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. The Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five Regional Advisory Councils and sets policy for all protected species in Utah. Please respect everyone's right to an opinion tonight, even if it's in conflict with yours. We don't have a lot of people out here, so I don't think we're going to have a bunch of people jumping up and clapping, but we won't need a lot of that kind of support for people's opinions. This meeting's being recorded. It'll be transcribed. The minutes will be available on the division's webpage, and the audio recording will also be available. When speaking, please come up to the microphone here in the middle. That's for the public. State your name and where you're from if you wish. With that, we'll go to the agenda. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting.
I'd move that we approve the agenda for tonight's meeting.
Second.
We have a motion from Paul Cowley and a second from Jim Gaskill to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's unanimous. You should have received the minutes of the March 3rd meeting. Were there any amendments to those minutes? Okay, seeing none, chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the March 3rd, 2013, or 2015 Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting.
I move to approve the minutes of the March 3rd Advisory Council meeting.
We have a motion from Jim Gaskill and a second from Russ Lawrence to approve the minutes of the March 3rd Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Hold on just a second.
Okay, so the Wildlife Board meeting on March 5th had two action log items from the racks that were held throughout the state. The motion for the prairie dog management plan was as follows. I move that we put the following on the action log item. The division will research the potential impact of lead poisoning on killed wildlife in the field as proposed by Darris Jones in the Southeast RAC and report back to the board at a later time. And the other motion was that we put the following action log item to be presented at the August 2015 Wildlife Board. The division will prepare informational status review of allowable primitive and non-primitive weapon usages compared with other states. Additionally, the division will prepare a review of evolving technologies in hunting weapons and related peripheral devices and optics. And that review should include, but not be limited to, the use of crossbows of various categories of archery hunts, magnified optics on muzzle-loading rifles, calibers of firearms allowed on rifle and pistol hunts, draw poundage and sighting devices on archery equipment, as well as the use of self-firing rifles. And the board also then approved the management plan and the rules that we also approved at our RAC meeting.
Thank you, John. The action log item pertaining to the primitive, non-primitive weapons is in reaction to a request by a legislator. So we're going to go back and look at all those things again. That did preempt a bill that was being pushed through the legislature that contradicts some of the things we've done recently, I think. So, or would have changed some of the things we've done recently. So there'll be a review of those advances in technology, you could say. Any questions on the Wildlife Board meeting update? Seeing none, we go on to the regional update.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome everybody to the Regional Advisory Council meeting. Just want to go through a quick update and kind of touch upon some of the projects our sections are involved in or have been involved in since the last time we met. Our aquatic section was out at Willard Bay doing an egg take on walleye. And the reason for that is we want to get walleye eggs into our hatcheries, raise them up, sterilize them, and then stock them back into certain waters. So it appears their efforts were real successful, and they were able to take the appropriate number of eggs. So right now, fishing across our region, right now for wipers and walleyes, it's really good fishing out at Willard. So if you'd like to fish wipers and walleyes, I mean, it is just outstanding right now. So if you enjoy that, please get out there and take advantage of it. The trout fishing is also good on Rockport, Echo, and East Canyon reservoirs. And Cutler Reservoir right now is fishing really well for catfish. So if you'd like to go up and try your luck at catching a catfish at Cutler, I'd suggest you do that. In our wildlife section, our biologists are finishing up deer, spring deer classifications. They're also in the middle of our sage grouse and short-tail grouse lek counts. Those are ongoing, and if you haven't had a chance to get out and join one of the biologists, I'd recommend you do that. And Randy Berger or Randy Wood would be a good contact for that, so keep that in mind. And then our pilot urban deer control rule will be sunsetting here in August, and so our next RAC you'll be seeing a revised rule to hopefully take that urban deer control effort now statewide. So hopefully that'll be on our agenda next RAC meeting. And then our biologist up in the Chalk Creek area found two new sage grouse leks this year. They were doing aerial reconnaissance of the area and actually discovered two new sage grouse leks. So that's kind of exciting news. In our outreach section, they're planning for a Fish with a Cop day. Here in Brigham City, and then also a couple other select cities along the Wasatch Front. They hosted CBS Evening News on a lek count. I don't know if you caught that. It was on April 6th. They had a CBS evening news program where they went out and actually covered dancing males on the lick. And then they're providing a lot of wild aware information to the counties and the different cities. Wild aware is a relatively new program that educates people on how to live and coexist with wildlife. And they had a very successful turkey hunting seminar up at Hardware Ranch. They had about 50 folks show up, and it was a well-attended event. In our habitat section, they're still finishing up a couple large bull hog projects out in West Box Elder. And their spring weed season is underway with this warm temperature and dry conditions. The weeds have gone crazy, and so they're trying to hit most of the weeds on our WMAs and get caught up on that. In our law enforcement section, one of our officers will be transferring to Davis County from East Box Elder. His name is Trevor Dolman. And our law enforcement staff will be helping out with the Youth Hunter Education Challenge, known as YHEC, coming up here soon. So that covers the regional update, unless there's any specific questions from the RAC. Yes?
Those two new leks up in Chalk Creek, do you know, are those newly discovered, or are they new leks now, I mean, just started to be used by birds?
To my knowledge, they're newly discovered, but Dave, do you want to, is that correct? They've probably been there, we just didn't know about them? You get your chance to speak at the mic, Dave.
I'm Dave Rich, the Summit County Wildlife Biologist. We went with Avery out of the Salt Lake office, Chad Wilson, myself, and did aerial, basically survey all over East Canyon. And we ended up in Chalk Creek and was able to find two new leks, and they're both on the Ensign Ranch property. We've never counted or have any evidence of birds ever being there before.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exciting news.
Okay. Thank you, Justin. I'd like to thank the council members that were able to attend the Aquatics Informational. I will be checking on the mileage reimbursement on that, and I'll get back to you. So we did have a good time. I thought it was a lot of good information. And I'd encourage you, if there's some similar presentation in the future, that you would attend. From the meeting now will proceed as follows. A representative of the Division of Wildlife Resources will make a presentation on the agenda item. Then we'll have questions from the public on the presentation. This is time for questions only, not comments. Next, we'll have questions from the council on the presentation. Then we'll take comments from the public on the agenda item. Persons representing themselves will have 3 minutes to comment. Persons representing organized groups will have 5 minutes to comment. Please fill out a blue card if you wish to comment and indicate that you would like to address the council or provide a written comment. These comment cards are available on the table in the back. At the end of the public comment period, the public portion of that agenda item ends, and further public participation will only be at the request of the council for clarification. Next, the council will comment on the agenda item. Then the council will make motions recommending action by the Wildlife Board. They'll deliberate those motions and vote. Council members who wish to abstain from voting will state their conflict, and council members voting in opposition will provide their reasoning. The meeting will then proceed to the next agenda item until completed. So we are now at item number 5, Conservation and Sportsman Permits Rule Amendments. Justin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Shannon. I'm the Big Game Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife. And tonight, I'm going to present a rule change to R657-41, which is a conservation and sportsman permit rule. So to begin, this rule change adds clarity and consistency to DWR and state parks for mule deer and bighorn sheep permits that are valid for Antelope Island State Park. And what it does is it defines a special Antelope Island State Park limited entry permit. And so in the past, there was confusion as to the mule deer permit and the bighorn sheep permit so that were available for the island. And what we've done is classified mule deer permits as premium limited entry and then bighorn sheep as once in a lifetime, similar to others units in the state. And then permits and season dates approved by the Wildlife Board, and then they'll be held in a general drawing. This rule change also provides a framework to enter into a cooperative agreement or a memorandum of understanding between the Division of Wildlife and State Parks. The purpose of that cooperative agreement is to establish season dates and the number of mule deer and bighorn sheep permits to be issued on Antelope Island. It establishes hunting procedures and regulations, protocols for issuing permits and conducting hunts for antlerless deer if ever needed, and procedures and conditions for transferring revenue derived from the conservation permits on Antelope Island. Another byproduct of this would be that the Division of Wildlife and Parks will coordinate annually regarding limited entry permits valid on Antelope Island State Park. Another update of the rule that's independent of Antelope Island is requirements for conservation organizations to participate in the program. So some of the changes include that conservation organizations must be a nonprofit chartered organization or a 501c3 and promote the protection and preservation of one or more conservation permit species. So kind of the idea behind that is if you were a sportsman organization that was for the preservation and protection of bluegill, it really wouldn't fit because we don't have bluegill conservation permits, and so it wouldn't qualify as one of the groups to receive these permits. And currently no organizations in the program are affected by this change. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Are there any questions from the public on the presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Questions from the council on the presentation? Jim?
I think that I missed this the last time we talked about these, but in reading through it again, I noted that it's possible for someone that didn't draw to get a permit, and I wonder if you could explain how that works and what might be the considerations that the conservation organization would use to award a permit if the original awardee were to withdraw or be unable to hunt.
I'm not sure I understand the question. They could get a permit even if they didn't draw? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. The situation would be that the person who drew could award that permit to someone else, mm-hmm. or if that person who drew was unable to hunt for whatever reason, then the organization could give that permit to someone else. Mm.
You'll have to pardon my ignorance. I don't know that part.
Jim?
You didn't read it either.
Yeah. Well, what I did is we updated these portions.
Yeah, that's why I prefaced it's been there, but I just wanted a little clarification.
I can get with you afterwards and go over it a little finer, but I don't have a good answer for you with that.
Okay. Jim, are you confusing the conservation permit that's with the public drawing permit?
No.
Because the drawing permits are only for the public, and that's administered by the division.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I'm talking about the conservation permit.
Permit. Yeah,
not the permit that's drawn. But it's pretty plain that if, say, SFW were running it, and the person who got the tag couldn't use it, then they could give it to somebody else. But it doesn't, as far as I could see, have much specificity in the language as to how they would choose the person to get the tag.
It doesn't state specifically who can get the tag, but there's a lot of information there about how that's done, right, Justin?
The rules are outlined that they have to have a license, have to be otherwise eligible, but Other than that, there's no, it didn't say whether they will have another auction or have a drawing or have first come, first served or anything like that.
Retain 70% of the revenue.
We can meet afterwards. That's fine.
I think it has a lot to do with like the other conservation permits. If somebody buys one and they can't use it,
right,
they can turn around and sell that for the same price. They can't make a profit on it, or they can give it to someone.
Right. But then there's another stipulation for the organization to do that, which somehow I had missed the last time I read it. And so I was just, let's move on. I don't want to be here any longer. Randy will get mad if we stay too late. So.
And I apologize for being ill-prepared to discuss that. I can find out, but I don't have a good answer.
Yeah, no problem.
Sorry. Yeah.
Right.
I got a question. Are you guys ramping up to try to sell two? Why are you changing it from one deer to multiple deer, multiple sheep?
Oh, right now we have one that's a public draw and then one that's a conservation permit.
Yeah.
It's just if we ever decided to expand that, we want the rule to provide sideboards for how that would be done. That's all it is. Right now, the answer is no. I mean, not for next year or anything like that. But.
Okay.
John?
How does the revenue partition between state parks and DWR?
Yeah, that's a good question. So right now, what happens is when the permit is sold, 90% of that comes right back to the Division of Wildlife, and then that is given to Antelope Island State Park. And as part of this MOU, it's going to discuss the transfer of that money and how it can be improved upon, if it can be. So it doesn't go directly to state parks. It comes to Division of Wildlife, and then we issue it to state parks.
And so in the MOU, you'll describe the ways in which the park can use those funds. Will it be that specific or no?
I think we already have some sideboards for that. It has to be for the species that it's the permit is valid for, some of that stuff. But, yeah, as part of that MOU, we can essentially say what's going to be best. Is it to treat habitat, water development, research, transplants? Anything along those lines are open.
Yeah, Jim.
So is there anticipation that the division will get some of that money instead of giving all of it to Antelope Island, or is
I don't know if anticipation is the right word. It's just right now we just give it to Antelope Island State Park, and what we want to do, but we work so closely together, especially on things like transplants and some of the habitat stuff. It's a joint effort, and so it's just, is that money being spent to the best of its use? That's all it is. Those are the discussions we'll have with the MOU.
Bryce.
Does the division have a biologist assigned to Antelope Island?
Yes.
Who is it?
It's Chad. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just say for instance, because this rule makes it kind of open that you guys could possibly have another permit as soon as next year, because it's up to the Wildlife Board. I mean, is the habitat, or is the population or the quality supporting multiple permits right now?
It's
where I'm going with the question is, I mean, obviously,
yeah,
you see what the prices have been bringing. Every year, the score is going down. Mm-hmm. Every year. And I see them ruining it by issuing multiple permits. Okay. So I wanted to see if the question will it support it?
How many permits a given unit, not just Antelope Island, will support is really a social thing, because we're harvesting males and the buck to doe ratio out there is doing fine. So it just depends socially what level of quality we want out there. So can it support it? Certainly. Should we add more? That's the question we should discuss.
Justin, permit numbers will be negotiated between the division and the and parks.
Yes.
But they're approved by the Wildlife Board in the MOU. Is that correct?
Correct. And that's kind of why we're doing some of this, is to better define those roles. Which board, the state Parks Board or Division of Wildlife Board, approves permits, approves season dates, some of that stuff. We're just trying to get alignment between what we're doing and State Parks is doing.
Okay. Will the MOU come back through the RAC process or only go to the Wildlife Board?
It's my understanding that it'll certainly go to the Wildlife Board. And as we talked it over internally today, I think we're leaning towards taking it through the RAC process as well. So, and we don't do that for a lot of our MOUs. But it wouldn't surprise me if it goes through the RAC and board process.
It's just there's been a lot of interest in the past and obviously some on our council now about what those numbers might end up being. So that's the reason of my question.
Well, yeah, and whether the MOU goes through this process or not, season dates and permit numbers will always go through the RAC and board process, certainly.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. We'll now go to comments from the public. We don't have any blue cards from the public on this agenda item. Does anyone wish to comment? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Comments from the council and or motions?
I move that we approve the proposal by the division to clarify the Antelope Island permit process.
Is there a second?
A second.
If you allow me the liberty to word your motion. Recommendation would be to approve the conservation and sportsman permits rule R657-41 amendments as presented. Is that okay?
Well, yeah, I'll go with that. Wasn't my original intent, but I'll go with it.
Because that is the agenda item.
Yeah, but we don't always approve the whole item. I'll go on with it. It's okay.
There are a few other things in there. There's some housekeeping changes that are not related to Antelope Island.
I know. That's okay. We'll go with it.
Okay.
If the seconder will go with it.
I believe he would. Yes. Okay. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand. Say aye. It's unanimous. Go to number six, Bucks Bulls and Once in a Lifetime Permit Recommendations for 2015.
All right, tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls and Once in a Lifetime Permit Recommendations for this fall's hunt. Start out with deer. This graph here depicts the general season buck harvest over the last 10 years. As you can see, 2006, 2007 were pretty good years, and we dropped in a pretty good lull. In the last 3 years, despite permit reductions in 2012 through 2014, our annual harvest on general season units has increased. This last year, we were over 26,000 bucks harvested in the general season hunts. Fawn productions and trends, again, going back the last 15 years or so, took a pretty good dive in the early 2000s. We climbed out of it, and the last 6 years we've been pretty stable between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does. For buck-to-doe ratio trends, looking at it over the last 20 years or so, 1993-94, we were at about 7.5, 8 bucks per 100 does, and we climbed up to about 15 bucks per 100 does in the 2000 and hovered around that for the next decade or so with little peaks and valleys. But the last 3 years have been really good as regards to our buck to doe ratios in the state. And currently we're over 21 bucks per 100 does on general season public land units. So for general season deer permit recommendations, we're recommending an increase of 2,250 permits. We've had 84,800 approved last year. We're recommending 87,050 for this year. On the 30 units, we're recommending a decrease on one unit, no change on 17, and increases on 12. I'm going to present this a little different than I have in the past. I wanted to break it up by region so we can go more quickly through some and spend more time on others if that works. And if you have feedback, let me know. But for the northern region, what I have is the unit on the far left and the objective next to that. So are we managing for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does or 15 to 17? And then the three-year buck-to-doe ratio average. Those highlighted in white are within the sideboards, and those that are in green are exceeding. And the buck-to-doe ratio trend is just where we are with our buck-to-doe ratio this year relative to last year, and then last year's permits and this year's recommendation. So for the northern part of the northern region, we're recommending an increase on the cash and no change on the other units. For central region, again, recommending increases on Mount Nebo and Wasatch Mountains West units, and no change on the other three for those units. For the southern region, all of their units are at or exceeding their buck-to-doe ratios, and we're recommending increases on the Beaver, Fillmore Pavant, Mount Dutton, Zion, Monroe, and Plateau Boulder Kaparowicz units. For the southeast region, recommending increases on the Manti unit, and no change on the remainder. And then in the northeast part of the state, we're recommending a decrease on the North Slope unit and increases on the South Slope Yellowstone and Abinaquin Current Creek. Moving on to premium limited entry deer units. If I can take a minute and explain how these are managed. What we do is we manage these to an age objective and a buck-to-doe ratio. And so the age objective on these units is anything greater than or equal to 40% of the bucks in the harvest need to be 5 years or older. And so on the Henrys, our three-year average is 72% of the bucks are 5 years or older, and on the Ponsagon, it's 58. And these dictate the normal premium limited entry permit. But then we also have buck-to-doe ratios that we manage for, and our goal is 40 to 55. And if there's changes in these, they'll be reflected in the management buck permits that we issue. And so on the Henry Mountains, our three-year average is 52, with a pretty good decrease from last year to this year. And then on the Ponsagon, a slight increase, and we're at 44. So what does this look like total permit-wise? On the Henry Mountains, we're recommending an increase of one permit from 48 to 49. It's not a true increase in the sense that we're adding more tags. What we have is last year, there's a landowner association, and every 3 years they get a permit. And so last year they had it, this is their off year, so instead of doing away with that permit, we're just simply giving it back to the public draw pool. And then on the Ponsagon, no change in permits from last year. In regards to management buck hunt or permits, we're recommending a decrease on the Henry Mountains from 35 to 30, and on the Ponsagon, a slight increase from 14 to 16. For limited entry units, units on the far left, that what we're managing for in the middle there, objective is 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does, and then the buck-to-doe ratio over the last 3 years, and the average on the far right. So as you can see on the Bookcliff South and Diamond Mountain, we're exceeding our buck-to-doe ratio objectives, and on the Fillmore Oak Creek and Dolores Triangle, we're under objective, and the others are right there in the middle between 25 and 35. So for limited entry deer permit recommendations, there's really not a lot of movement in many of these units. The ones that I want to highlight are in green. The North Slope Summit, which is a new hunt that was passed in November, we're recommending 200 permits for that, the High Country Buck Hunt. And then on the West Desert Vernon, an increase of 10 permits from 181 to 191 for a total of 1,022 for these traditional limited entry units. The other thing that we passed in November was a late season muzzleloader deer hunt, which occurs on a general season unit, but you use your limited entry points for it, and it overlaps with the muzzleloader elk hunt in late October, early November. And we're recommending 46 permits for these six areas. So in total, we're recommending an increase of 257 limited entry permits, 1,068 total, and 811 up from 811 from last year. And the other thing I wanted to highlight was the multi-season ones. many of the permits were taken out of the any weapon on the tables in the rack packet, and that was to provide a multi-season hunting opportunity on these limited entry units so they can hunt archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon. So, moving on to deer, the general season elk permits are as follows. No change in spike or any bull units, but we are recommending an increase in the youth any bull permits from 300 to 500. And that's simply to create a little bit more opportunity for our youth hunters on any bull units. And then the late season youth any bull hunt, a decrease of 5 permits. This question's asked a lot. What was the spike success rate last year? And it was 13%. So for limited entry elk permits, we recommend an increase of 96 total statewide. Last year we issued 2,842, and this year we're recommending 2,938. If you break it down by age, the 7.5 to 8-year-old units, we're recommending a decrease of 6 permits. The one thing that was encouraging this year is every one of these units saw pretty good increases in their trends in age. We've cut permits on these units over the last 3 or 4 years pretty aggressively, and we're starting to see that response and average age is increasing. For the 6.5 to 7-year-old units, recommending a decrease of an increase of 9 permits, but with that a decrease on Mountain Evo. For 5.5 to 6-year-old units, we recommend an increase of 65 permits. Again, every one of these units, which is really the bulk of the limited entry elk hunting opportunity in the state, is either at or exceeding their average age. And with that, we recommend increases on the LaSalle Mountains and the Wasatch Mountains. And also for here, the Northern Rack, a slight increase on the Box Elder Pilot Mountain as well. 4.5 to 5-year-old units, recommend an increase of 28 permits. With that said, we recommend a decrease on the North Cache and increases on Cache Meadowville, the South Cache, and the Ponsagon. For pronghorn recommendations, we recommend an increase of 23 permits. We had 781 last year, and we're recommending 804 tonight. And again, you'll see a decrease in the any weapon portion of this, and the reason that is because we passed a couple additional muzzleloader units throughout the state, and so those permits that would have gone to an any weapon hunter are now going to muzzleloader. So that's why the decrease. For once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations, not a lot of movement, really. A slight reduction in moose, a decrease of 11 public draw permits on bison, and desert bighorn, Rocky Mountain bighorn, and mountain goats are all within one permit of where we were last year. So, thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Do we have any questions from the public on the presentation? Seeing none, go to the council. Questions from the council? Jim?
What's the maximum deer tag allotment that we could have?
97,000.
So we're 10,000 below?
Yes.
Russ. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
In looking at some of them, it doesn't seem like we're following the recommendations or the buck to doe ratio very closely in some of them. And I'm wondering, are those just guidelines or...
No, they're more than guidelines. What it is the way the plan is written is it says if you're exceeding, you should increase. If you're below, you should decrease. But the one thing that the statewide deer plan did was also say take trend into account. And so if you're above but you've been trending down, you can kind of stay tight and not have to be so reactive from year to year. Or in some cases where I think we had a unit out here once where we were like $20 per 100 does and 16 then 12, but your three-year average is still 16. You know, we would still want to cut permits in that instance. Some units are dominated by private lands, like the 9 Mile, Morgan, Southridge, some of that stuff. And so even though there is opportunity to increase permits, because of the limited access and amount of public land available for hunters, it is kind of an artificial cap. We just haven't pushed that envelope very much. So.
Yeah, I noted a Box Elder unit, for example, where you're considerably off on what appears to be an opportunity to increase hunter opportunities because of the large disparity between the objective and the buck doe ratio and so forth. And so I'm just wondering if that's an example of one with a lot of private land.
Well, the box elder, we had a pretty good cut last year in permits, and with that our 3-year average is at 15. And so again, it was just a recommendation to stay stable and give it another year and see what direction it goes. Unless you have something to add to that, Jim, is it? Or not? We should have brought the mic to you, Jim.
Yeah. He's hobbling around pretty good.
Jim Christensen, the Box Elder Unit 1 District Biologist. Jim Christensen, Box Elder, Unit 1 District Biologist. So for the trend out in the Box Elder unit, when we went to the subunit structure, we had permits higher than we probably should have, and we were at 20 bucks per 100 does, and within 2-year period, we dropped all the way down on a single year buck to doe ratio down about to 13 bucks per 100 does, and then we cut permits for 2 years in a row, and then just last year we started to trend back up. And so that's why we're leaving permits the same, to see if we're going to continue to rise or if we're going to stay steady or just what's going to happen.
Okay.
Russ?
Yeah, Justin, this is kind of it's not the same question, but there's 3 units to show a decreasing trend in buck to doe ratios, but permits were increased. What was the thinking there?
Generally with that, we have some units that, you know, if you're managing for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and you went from 24 bucks per 100 does down to 22, we're still far exceeding the 18 to 20 sideboards. And so in some of those instances, we still recommended an increase. So, unless you want to talk specific units, we can do that. But that was kind of the idea behind that.
Well, the Bavant is 20 right now, and that's, I guess, the high end of the objective.
Yeah, so the Fillmore Bavant, in 2012, they were at 16 bucks per 100 does, and then they went to 24, and then they went to 20. And so we looked at, and we talked to the biologist out in that area, and he said his deer are in really good shape. He saw he's really good fawn production. Our survival, as I showed earlier, has been really good throughout the state, or I'll show in the next presentation, has been really good. So he just feels like he can provide a little more opportunity. He's exceeding or at the upper end of that, and it's a pretty minor increase, 100 permits. So yeah, thank you.
So Justin, back to the 3 units that are under objective on their 3-year average. So you talked about if they have an increasing trend, they're okay. So that gets it down pretty much to the LaSalle Mountains.
Yeah.
That's under objective and it's decreasing, but you kept the permits the same.
We did. And the reason we did is that's a really hard unit to classify. And what I mean by that is a lot of our traditional range units, you'll have deer that congregate on a winter range, and with that you can get really good classification counts, see a lot of does, fawns, and bucks, and with that they kind of trickle from high elevation to low all throughout the classification season. And so you'll notice on the LaSalles, if you go back over the last 10 years, there's a lot of variance. You can be at you know, a few years ago we were at 11 bucks per 100 does, and nobody believed that unit was really at 11 bucks per 100 does, but you see what you see. And then the next year, it jumped to 17.4, and the herd really didn't change that much. There's a lot of variance in that classification, and so it was just an effort to stay static with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Craig.
Yeah, on the once in a lifetime for a mountain goat, on the Chalk Creek Camas unit, last year there were 5 resident tags, and this year there's 4 resident and 1 non-resident. I was just wondering why that changed.
Let me pull that up real quick.
Okay.
Which unit again? I'm sorry.
That's 6804.
Oh, yeah. So in this, what we've tried to do in the past is if we have five permits or more, we try to offer a non-resident, because a lot of times our once-in-a-lifetime, you get caught in this this 5 to 8 to 9 range. And so if on every unit we said, let's wait until we hit 10 permits to issue the non-resident, statewide our ratios would be very out of whack. We could have, for 100 permits, you might have 96, 97 permits going to non or to residents and only 3 to non-resident. And as we've looked at it, if you start throwing non-residents a permit at about 5, then it evens out statewide for us. So that's kind of what that was behind.
So the objective is still like 9 to 1, basically?
We try to provide our non-residents about a 10% of all the permits. And we don't always get there because it's a lot of rounding on small units like this. And so it's just trying to compensate and say, where can we provide opportunity and try to be around 90%.
John.
So, like on the late season muzzleloader deer hunts, that's the justification for having 4 resident permits and 1 non-resident?
Correct, yeah.
And is like that etched in stone, mandated by legislature, that we provide those non-resident permits, or?
No, there's nothing that says. We've just kind of, it's more of a culture, I guess, to say 90% resident, 10% non-resident. It's not in our rule or anything like that. It's just something that we strive for. And some states are a lot more liberal. They'll give their non-residents, a quarter of the tags in some instances. And we've just kind of hovered around 10%, really haven't set it in stone anywhere. So
it just seems to me like when there's only 4 or 5 tags, it would sure increase the odds for residents to be able to not to have one more available, like the goat thing that Craig talked about.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, it's a social issue. For this year, we have to provide a non-resident because in November when we set the hunts, we allowed non-residents to apply. So we have to provide one for this year. But in November, if you're seeing hunts like this that you don't think warrant a non-resident, let's talk about it. But, it's we're just trying to find that balance.
So when permits are decreasing, sometimes you'll be trapped into a position where you have to give the non-resident a tag even though you normally wouldn't.
Correct.
But
yeah.
Then it's going to balance out when you get above 5 or when you get above 10, they're not going to pick up another tag till you get to 15.
Yeah.
Basically.
Where's a good example of that? We had a couple. Here's a good example. Like on the Ogden-Willard Peak, because in November we took that non-resident permit away, because in the past we'd only been issuing 3 public draw permits. Well, now that we're issuing 8 public draw permits, a non-resident doesn't get one. So it's give and take on this. And the problem is these units are so small and there's so few permits that to just say a 90-10 split doesn't always equal. But at the end of the day, when we look at the permits in as a whole, we want it to be around 90%. And I know that's not perfect. I acknowledge that.
Paul.
I'm struggling as I look at, if we're looking at that 3-year average and then we're looking at the increasing or decreasing. As I look at like Fillmore Oak Creek, here we have a objective of 18 to 20 bucks per doe. And then the 3-year average is 22, and yet we're not recommending an increase there, and yet we're saying the population or that ratio is increasing.
Correct.
And so I'm struggling with that. And then when we look at the cash, we have the 3-year average, though it's increasing, it's had those lows similar to Box Elder,
mm-hmm.
and then a high year, and yet the 3-year average puts us right on track. And yet we're increasing the permits, and it seems to be inconsistent.
That's the thing. Every unit is unique. If you look at the Fillmore Oak Creek, part of that unit is general season. The other part is limited entry. So it's really complicated. And if you look at the limited entry side of it right here, Fillmore Oak Creek, their buck-to-doe ratio is 23. And what we've wanted, and so that warrants a decrease in limited entry permits. And what we've kind of said on that unit is because we're classifying sometimes the same deer, we've said we recognize that it's over on general season.
So you've got a mixed objective.
Actually. Yeah, and we're addressing that with that unit plan because it causes confusion as to why we're not trying to recommend permits when we should. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
That helps.
Any additional questions from the council? Okay, seeing none. Do we have any blue cards? Does anyone from the public wish to comment? Okay, we'll go back to the council. Justin, one thing I would ask you, if maybe in your future presentations, on the elk permit and age trends, I really like that I can see four years of what the permits were, so I can relate the permit numbers back to the effect it's had on the changes. You've changed the permits, and then there's it affects the age trend.
Yeah.
Right? But on your deer, you only have 1 year. You have 2014. Well, you have 2 years. You've got your recommended and your 2014 permits.
Oh, I see.
So okay. I can't really... without going in and looking through a bunch of reports, I can't find what the previous permit numbers were and if changes had an effect on the bucks per 100 does. So okay. Maybe in a future presentation, maybe you'd want to put that in there if you can squeeze it all in. I understand that's a lot.
No, that's good feedback. And I'm trying to flood you with data anyway, so this will help me. Yeah, that's a good point, though, because the elk, it makes sense. You can see the increases based on permits.
If it actually worked, if the change of permits actually affected your age objective there.
Yeah.
And here we're talking about bucks per 100 does, but we would hope that change in permit numbers would affect that also.
Okay.
So, okay.
That's a good suggestion. Yeah.
Jim?
And mine's kind of along the same lines, and I'm not one to try to recommend that you do a lot more work than you already do, but it would seem like in those situations that where you appear to be not right on with your buck-to-doe ratios and your decrease and increase in tags, that perhaps you could put a note by those saying mostly private land or, you know, just a few words. And I realize that's going to be a little bit of a hassle, but it might avoid us railing on you a little bit in the end. And I also think that we shouldn't hesitate to get up to that 97,000 number. Hunter opportunity is a major factor, and we're assured every year that killing bucks is not really hurting the population. So it seems to me if we've got a lot of bucks, we ought to have a lot of hunters.
Okay.
And, you know, whenever there's a question, should we increase or should we not increase, we should if we're within guidelines.
Bryce.
I know we're always asking you questions and railing on you, but I just wanted to say you guys have done a fabulous job. I mean, for one, there's not a whole crowd of people here mad, so I think overall the last couple of years, you've done a fabulous job on what you have been doing, and it's making a difference.
Any additional comments and or motions? Paul.
So I'd move that we accept the 2015 big game permit recommendations as presented.
Second from John Cabot. We have a motion. So we have a motion from Paul Cowley and a second from John Cabot. Recommend the Wildlife Board approve the bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations for 2015. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 It's unanimous. Okay, item number 7, antlerless permit recommendations for 2015.
Thank you.
right. Now I'm going to present the Atlas recommendations for this fall and winter of 2016. So to begin, we'll start with deer again. You've seen this graph. Again, the take-home message is over the last 6 years, our fawn-to-doe ratio has been stable and average between 61 and 65. The other thing that we showed last year for the first time, and we got a lot of good feedback on it from RAC members and people that attended from the public, was our statewide survival rates. This is what we've done. We have 7 units in the state that we go and capture deer and radio collar adults and fawns, and from that we can get we can quantify and estimate survival. And so for the adults over the last 5 years, our survival rates have been average. Anything between 84% and 86% is average. But our fawn survival has just been exceptional. The first 2 years we were about 52-53% survival. And then in 2012 it jumped up to 78, and we were very optimistic and excited. The next year it stayed at 78, and this year it's at 82. And with that, you build momentum in these deer herds. And as a result, you're able to increase the population. These populations are able to increase. So what I have here is a graph. On the x-axis is just the years over the last 20, 22 years. And on the y is the number of deer estimated in the state. And right now we estimate there's about 355,000 deer statewide. In our last management plan, the short-term objective was 350, and the new objective is about 425, but pretty excited about that trend over the last 3 years. So when it comes to the Atlas deer permits for public draw, this is just what we've recommended and what the Wildlife Board's approved over the last 6 years. This year we're recommending an increase of 215 permits statewide. The new hunts are proposed to reduce deer damage on private lands for the most part. On North Slope, Manila, Philpico, that's a new hunt that we'll have in the northeast region with a new boundary, and then with a boundary change. And then the southern region, Circleville North and Circleville South, we're trying to target deer that are in these communities that are causing some problems. And then a new hunt on Panguitch Lake, Panguitch Valley hunt. So what does this look like for each unit? We recommend increases on the North Slope, the Beaver, Mount Dutton, and the Panguitch Lake, and that's how we get our 625 total doe permits recommended for this year. For elk, our statewide population trend is as follows. Slowly been climbing over the last 6, 7, 8 years or so, and this year, based on all the modeling efforts, and the harvest we were able to get, it seems to have leveled off. And we'll be able to verify this next year with a lot of our elk flights and over the next couple of years as well, which will be good. Population objective of just under 71,000, and we're currently about 81,000 statewide. Our total number of permits, the light green, which you can't see very well, I apologize for that, is we recommend a decrease of about 1,800 permits this year. And with that, and these are the public draw permits, and one reason we're recommending such a decrease is our Atlas elk control permits have increased substantially from 2013 to 2014. And based on the feedback, we think they'll increase even more moving forward. And what these permits are is it's essentially an elk permit that's at a reduced price. And if you have an antlered permit, like for a spike elk or a buck deer, or a once-in-a-lifetime permit, you can buy this elk permit for a reduced price. And we've had this for many years now. We're recommending 3 new units, one on the Vernon where the population's zero. We essentially don't want elk there. And then Mount Dutton and Pine Valley, where elk harvest is just difficult to obtain. So instead of adding more public draw hunters in there to get our harvest, it's hunters who are already there, buy a tag and kill a buck and an antlerless elk. So, I've changed this up as well. I feel like in the past when we've given this presentation and said we're issuing 16,000-17,000 permits, it was very up here. It was hard to get much detail out of that without the RAC packet. And so I'm trying to in the spirit of being more transparent, wanted to break it down by each unit. So this is the northern region, and the units are there on the left. our current population objective and the population estimate is the next two columns, and then last year's permits and what we're recommending this year. So for the northern region, for instance, our population objective is just under 12,000. Current estimate is just over 18,000, and we're recommending a slight increase in permits on the Cache, Ogden, Morgan South Ridge, East Canyon, Camas, and the North Slope. And then in addition to that, we're proposing a new hunt called the Cache Valley Northeast Benches. In the packet, I think it was called Cache Richmond Hyde Park. We had to change it because we already had a hunt boundary that had that name, but it's very minor. So, for the central region, again, their estimate's 5,300. Their objective's 5,300. Their estimate's 5,900. And they're recommending a slight decrease in permits in that region. For the northeast region, they're recommending a decrease of about 2,000 permits. Most of that cut is coming on the South Slope Yellowstone and the Current Creek and Abenaquin, where antlerless elk control permits have really helped get them the harvest that they need. And in addition to that, they're recommending a new hunt, the Bookcliffs Bitter Creek East, and they're clarifying a boundary on the North Slope West Daggett, and a new hunt and a boundary clarification on Manila Phil Pico on the North Slope. For the southeast region, a slight decrease in permits, most of that on the 9 Mile Range Creek, but a slight increase on the Central Mountain Manti as well, 25 permits, and no new hunts or boundary changes being proposed. And then for the southern region, pretty static, a very slight increase occurring on the Pinguitch Lake and Ponsagant and Beaver, but decreases on the Fillmore and Mount Dutton. And they're recommending new hunts on the Beaver, Pinguitch Lake, and Ponsagant units. So for doe pronghorn permits, just a slight decrease from last year. Last year we had 669. This year we're recommending 644. And as you can see, that cut is on the Cache, Morgan, Southridge, Ogden unit, 190 permits to 165. And no new hunts or boundary changes are being proposed for pronghorn. For antlerless moose, again, no public draw permits for antlerless moose this year. And no new hunts or boundaries changes are being proposed. And that's all I have for antlerless. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Any questions from the public on the presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Questions from the council on the presentation? Jim?
I notice on the LaSalle that you're a couple thousand elk under, or maybe a couple hundred elk under objective, but you didn't reduce the number of tags, and just wondered why.
Let me see.
Objective is 25, and you're at 2350, and oh. You kept the number of permits the same.
Yeah, that population's been pretty stable, and the reality is with 210 permits and the limited harvest we get with CWMUs and agriculture there, with that recommendation, that population should grow. With that recommendation, it's not intended to keep it stable or hold back. With only 210 permits, that population should grow next year. So.
Okay.
Mr. John.
Just out of curiosity, historically, how far back would we have to go before we'd see Utah deer populations at what our current objective is of 425,000?
I'm sorry, how far back would we have to go until
historically to see where, you know, where conditions would have been favorable for that many deer?
Probably late 80s, mid 80s would be my guess. It's really hard to estimate that far back. You know, you can look at harvest and some of that stuff, but it's that would be my best guess.
Any other questions from the council? John?
I would like to follow up a little bit more on, you know, the difference between a objective population and where we're at. For instance, the Wasatch Advantequin, we dropped from 1,150 tags down to 150, and yet our population of elk has not changed.
Yeah.
We're still over objective.
Correct.
And the whole purpose for the cow elk tag harvest was to get us down to those objectives that we were trying to get to.
Yeah. No, it's a fair question, and what it is...
I know there's been a lot of public outcry about we're killing all of the elk, but they're still there because we counted them and we still saw them.
The Wasatch is an interesting one, both the west of Inequin and Kern Creek, because we are over objective what we should be. But as we've issued more permits in the past, a lot of the increases that you saw where we were climbing on public draw permits were going to these units. And the challenge that we had was we were growing elk on private land and we were losing them on public land. So our public land hunters were getting extremely frustrated saying, here I buy a full price tag, I go out, all the elk are on private. And that's the challenge that we have on that unit. And so the antlerless elk control permits, a lot of the people that got those tags went to the Wasatch, and their harvest was comparable to last year, if not even a little better in some of those pockets. And so we felt like instead of adding more hunters we felt like if we added more hunters, we could actually hurt our chances to kill elk. Sometimes you can kill more elk with less people, because if you're just scaring them onto private, our public hunters have a difficult time harvesting. That's a challenging area that we have.
Justin, can you lean into the mic a little there?
Sorry.
Thank you. Did he get you covered there, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Additional questions from the council? Okay, seeing none. We don't have any blue cards on this agenda item. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to comment? Okay, we'll go to the council. Comments and or motions from the council. Russ?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the antlers permit recommendations for 2015 that the division has presented.
Second.
Yeah. Did I hear you, Bryce?
Okay. Tried to.
He very quietly whispered he was seconding the motion. If he talked a lot more, it would be nice that he couldn't talk, but he's pretty quiet over there. We have a motion from Russ Lawrence and a second from Bryce Thurgood to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the antlerless permit recommendations for 2015. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 It's unanimous. Now we'll go to item number 8, 2015 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations. Oh.
Thank you. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the division. And tonight I'll be presenting the 2015 Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit antlerless voucher permit review and recommendations. The reason it's broken out in vouchers and permits is they come to the CWMU's as vouchers on their permits, and they come as permits to our public draw for our public. Okay, just as an overview, currently we have 127 CWMUs statewide, and of those 127, 70 of the CWMUs have antlerless permits or are requesting allocation for those permits for them. 15 of those have been previously approved. As you know, our CWMUs are on three-year management plans, and they're approved for 3 years. 15 in the state were already approved. As you, I don't know if you remember last year in November and December board meeting, we had the majority of the CWMUs were up for renewal, and they were renewed at that time. So at that time, they were all the bucks and bull numbers were approved in their management plans, but the antlerless numbers need to be approved through this process this spring. So two of the CWMUs that were previously approved to request changes, and 55 of them were the renewals that require Wildlife Board approval for new three-year CORs. And so in summary, we have 70 CWMUs that are requesting 319 private permits or vouchers and 1,250 public permits that will be allocated through our public draw system for a total of 1,569 total permits. The CWMUs have permits that are allocated in ratios between public and private, and how that's determined is what happens with the buck and bull permit option that they choose in the fall during that process. For example, if they choose for their bucks and bulls a 90% private, 10% public, all the antlerless permits that are allocated to the CWMU go to the public, so 100% go to the public. If they choose an 85-15 permit split, bucks and bulls, for example, they would get a 25-75 and then so on down. On pronghorn and moose, it's always a 60-40. They have no choice on that. It's a 60-40 permit split for bucks and bulls and a 40-60 permit split for antlerless. So I'll go through the recommendations by region. I'm not going to read all these, but I'll go through some of the highlights. Junction Valley is one of the first one up there is one of the previously approved permit numbers that they've asked for a change. They were at 10 two-doe permits, or a total of 20 permits, and they requested a reduction to go to 7 two-doe permits on that. The rest of these on here are new or renewals, and we need to approve. The RAC will be voting on approving these current numbers that are on here. The division's recommendation on all these is approval of those. And this northern region continued. By far the majority of the permits are elk permits. There's a few pronghorn, but most of them are elk permits. Currently we have no moose, antlerless moose permits in the state. It's for the northern region. Southeastern region, the majority of these are renewals or new. There's one change on the JB Ranch. They requested an increase of 5 total antlerless elk permits. And the division recommends approval of all of these. Southeastern region has continued. These are all renewals. And the requested permit numbers. The division recommends approval of all those also. Southern region, these are all renewals from last fall. The division also recommends approval of all these. Central region, these are all renewals with the exception of one new to Crab Creek, and these are the corresponding numbers, and the division recommends approval of all these permit numbers, antlerless permit numbers also. Northeastern region, two renewals and one new one, recommend approval of these numbers as presented. So as an overview, for all the recommended permits, as I said, the majority of these are all elk permits for the antlerless. We do have two different CWMUs. We're recommending 7 two-doe permits on one CWMU and 5 one-doe permits on another CWMU in the southern region. The elk permits are recommending 255 private permits or vouchers as they go to the CWMU. Or 1,125 public permits for a total of 319 permits that would go to the CWMU or the private side, and 1,250 public permits. And what that represents is 79.7% of all the antlerless permits go to the public through the draw. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Do we have any questions from the public on the presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Questions on the presentation from the council? R. Jeffrey.
I can't believe I've never asked this question before. But why is the pronghorns set at 60-40 public split, and the deer and elk, they could go up to 90-10 on these splits if they wanted?
Pronghorn and moose, when we originally set up the program, and I think it's mainly because of the low numbers and the decreased opportunity that's there. But when it was originally set up, it was originally set up as the posted hunting unit program. And when they set those permit splits, that was agreed by the committees. Everybody was involved in the making of this program that the splits would be like that. So
is it going to be like that forever?
It doesn't have to be, but currently it's staying on that trend.
Any additional questions from the council? Craig.
Yeah, you mentioned that during a three-year stint with the CWMU that they can request a change during that time. Can the DWR also request a change to either up or down?
That's correct. A lot of times as populations change and sometimes management objectives change within the units, we do have the ability to adjust that up and down as populations do change, and it can come from either the CWMU as a request or by the division.
Any additional questions? Okay. I don't have any blue cards from the public. Anyone from the public wish to comment on this agenda item? Seeing none, we'll go back to the council. Scott, I'd like to commend you for having 100% agreeance on the permit numbers and season dates, it appears, since you're recommending approval for all of them. So I'm sure you had to do a lot of hard work to get that done.
We'll have to commend the biologists for that. They're the ones that set all the numbers and everything. So.
It seems to be working fairly well right now, then.
Yes, I think the system's working very well.
Great. Any additional comments from the council and or motions?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we forward a approval recommendation on the CWMU antlers permit proposal. Is that right?
Scott, does it need to say vouchers and permits, or are you happy with just permits?
Permits. They all end up as a permit, so
okay.
I just made that distinction.
All right. Is there a second? John Wall? We have a motion from John Blizzard and a second from John Wall to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the 2015 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations as presented. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. Please raise your hand and say aye if you're in favor.
Aye.
It's unanimous. You did vote in favor, didn't you, Jim?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I looked too quick. Scott, will you be doing the last agenda item also?
No.
Oh, there he is. I was wondering where he was.
I'm not even going to try and find it for him.
So now we'll go to number 9, Mountain Goat Unit Management Plans.
My name is Dustin Shively. I'm a bighorn sheep mountain goat biologist for the state. I'll be here to talk about the mountain goat unit management plan updates.
Dustin, you're taller than anybody else, I think, and we'll have to work on you getting that mic next to you. There we go.
All right. The reason we're here to talk about management plans for mountain goats, and we've just passed the statewide plan for 2013 to 2018 for mountain goats, which required us to develop and or revise all the unit plans in the state. And so I'll be presenting the recommended management direction for those units. And I'll start by going over habitat modeling effort and then go over the unit plan format and finish by going over an overview of changes and recommended change from previous plans. The habitat model that we used was a methodology developed by Gross et al. In 2002, where he found that applying a 258-meter buffer to slopes that were 30 degrees or steeper correctly classified 87% of mountain goat habitat.
There was no elevational component to this model because goats are more associated with escape terrain than they are elevation. We ran it at 8, 9, and 10,000 feet across the state just to get acreages to figure out what type of habitat or how much habitat was available. From those acreages, we used those to influence our population objectives, trying to stick around. Our goal is to be about six mountain goats per square mile. This is a map of mountain goat habitat above 10,000 feet, 9,000 feet, and 8,000 feet. And here's all the habitat across the state. And it's a map of all the hunted mountain goat units that we have in the state. The current management plan allowed us to create two new units on Mount Dutton and the LaSalle's, which we did, and we took those unit management plans, and they were passed in August of 2013, so we won't be talking about those two units, but we'll be talking about the remainder. The unit plan format that we used starts out with just going over the boundary description, also goes over land ownership in goat habitat, and then goes over history and current status of the unit, and then also addresses any issues and concerns specific to that unit. Then there's three main portions that guide us in making management recommendations for population, habitat, and recreation. So there's two changes for population objectives in the state. The first one is the Cache Ogden East Canyon area. This area was formerly just the Willard Peak unit, but we were looking to expand that area in order to manage the goats that have dispersed from the Willard Peak unit. Our recommended change to the population objective would be going from 160 just on Willard Peak to 700 across the entire area. Our goal would still be to manage for no more than six goats per area, and so we'd still be using about five subunits to make sure that we kept the appropriate densities. The other change that we are recommending is on the Tusher Mountains, going from 150 to 175. This unit is chronically over objective and it serves as a source herd most of the time. And so we worked at the forest and trying to get an increase in the objective. Just since we've got a lot of goats on that unit, we've seen little to no habitat damage. And since it is always a source herd and it's chronically over objective, we increased or included additional language to increase our coordination with the forest on our transplant plans and nanny hunts. This is a table showing the changes for population objectives. Highlighted again, the Cache Ogden East Canyon area, going from 160 to 700 across the entire area. Increase of 540. On the Tushers, it's an increase of 25 for a total increase of 565. Our former management plans totaled 3,100, just over 3,100 across the state. And with this recommendation, we'd be managing for about 3,700. Current goat population across the state is estimated around 2,000. Here's a map of the Cache Ogden East Canyon area. Where they've expanded to. In red is the Willard Peak unit, which is currently the only area we have a management plan for. This expansion would include the Wellsville, where we'd manage for 75, or up to 75 goats there. And then also over on the middle cache, we'd look to manage for 190. The remaining Ogden portion of the unit, we'd manage for 200, 160 on Willard, and another 75 on East Canyon. So in total, again, 700. And the bigger thing here is that there's already goats that have dispersed from Willard that are already on a lot of these ranges. So again, this objective or this management plan would allow us to manage those. This map is of the Tushers. It's a large, mostly contiguous chunk of habitat. Again, it's a unit that's chronically over objective, and we've seen little to no habitat damage and worked with the Forest Service on the population increase. It's still one of the lowest densities in the state. In fact, it is the lowest density in the state. This table shows those densities. The units on the left there and the habitat model elevation that was used for that particular unit. And then on the far right-hand column are the goats per square mile. Again, our goal is to stay under 6 goats per square mile. The highest that we get is approaching 4 on the Wasatch units on Provo Peak and Box Elder area. And again, the lowest density is on the Tushers at 1.13. The habitat objectives of all the unit plans, they all include language that support habitat improvement projects and support regulated livestock grazing, also support coordination between us and the Forest Service on vegetation monitoring. We have been doing additional studies with GPS telemetry on the LaSalle's, Dutton, Nebo, and proposed through the Wasatch to get a little bit better understanding of goat habitat preferences. And we'll continue to do that type of monitoring to help guide future vegetation monitoring in goat habitat. Finally, our recreational objectives, just simply be consistent with the statewide management plan. The consumptive part, we would be making our recommendations to harvest 5 to 15% of the counted population using nanny hunts and transplants to regulate the overall population size. And use subunits multiple seasons to maximize hunter opportunities and maintain high hunter harvest success. Non-consumptive uses, we look to work with the forest and still find areas to install interpretive signs and kiosks, and also increase our viewing events. The mountain goat viewing is quite popular, watchable wildlife viewing event. We have some orders of 300 to 500 people attend these across the state when we hold these events. So they're very popular, and all these plans address opportunities to or for us to seek more opportunities for these events. So in summary, again, there's 3 main portions to each plan: population, habitat, and recreation. Just 2 changes to the populations, Cache, Ogden, East Canyon area, and the Tushers. And then the habitat portion, all supportive of habitat monitoring and improvement projects. And finally, the recreational uses will be just consistent with the statewide management plan.
Thank you, Dustin. Do we have any questions from the public on Dustin's presentation? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Questions from the council on the presentation? John?
Hey, on the goats that are dispersing on their own, are you finding this out on with your people, the biologists and all that, or general public letting you know about this?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there's been anecdotal reports, but we've also expanded our survey beyond Willard, just Willard Peak, and found the goats through our aerial surveys as well.
Chris.
Dustin, while you're including in the plan that we would like to increase non-consumptive viewer opportunities with kiosks and more watchable wildlife events, are there actions in the works to do any of those things? Pick out locations for kiosks and viewing sites, schedule dates on the calendar?
We do have plans to go find an area on the Mount Dutton, just one of the brand new areas that we just transplanted to. In terms of watchable wildlife, where we have the public come and watch, or, do goat viewing. I think we're in year 2 of a brand new one over on the Uintas. There's certainly room for more expansion, but those are the 2 that we have, I guess, that are the most recent.
Thank you.
Paul.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could review for us what efforts are being made to maintain wilderness characteristics in these areas where mountain goats are expanding into wilderness? So as we increase the population number up around Willard Peak because of those natural expansions, what are some of the actions the division is working on with the Forest Service to maintain the wilderness characteristics in those, like Mount Naomi, which currently doesn't have goats, and the Wellsvilles that has had some expansion into it?
As it pertains to the mountain goats, I guess we don't have planned transplants into the wilderness, but I don't know that we have any plans to, I'm not sure, are you
exactly what the question, what you're trying to address.
Well, part of the joint responsibility we have under the Wilderness Act is to maintain wilderness characteristics, and the state's responsible for part of that along with the forest. And so as we see the expansion of mountain goats into these areas, is there any concern with that?
We don't have any intention, I guess, at this time to transplant into the wilderness. But if they get there on their own, I guess that's partly what this management plan is for, is to be able to manage those goats that do reach those areas.
So to actually increase the harvest, to pull some of those out.
Well, it would provide us an opportunity to have hunts.
Okay, thank you.
Dustin, do you have an estimate of the current population on the new Cache Ogden East Canyon, the proposed unit, what the current population would be?
We have some numbers. Maybe I'll ask Darren to speak specifically to that. He's got a better handle on all the reports and observations.
I got the same mic problem that Dustin does. Darren DuBois, Cache, district biologist. We're probably at about 300 in the area from roughly, you know, just south of Weber Canyon to Idaho, and then including some small number around into that Mount Naomi Middle Cache area. We have anecdotal reports of goats and photographs of goats over there. On the last survey, we didn't encounter any goats over there. The bulk of the population is from Willard, a handful on the Wellsvilles, and they're mostly expanding south from Willard to the area between North Ogden Pass and Ogden Canyon, and then again on Ogden Peak, and then south of Weber Canyon. That's kind of where they are right now.
So the best estimate is 300.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Thank you. Craig.
Yes. When the transplant occurred on the LaSalle's, it was a little bit controversial, and I was just curious to see how that went, how many animals are there, and kind of what the impact has been.
We started off with 20 from that initial release. I believe we lost four. One fell off a ledge, two were unknown causes of death, and one was capture-related. Of those, they watched those for a year, and they documented two kids being born. And then we brought in another 15 last year, and one of those died from capture-related, but all of the other 14 are still there. Immediately, I guess the response was that there was several goats that dispersed. Some of them went out into the desert, but then they eventually came back onto the LaSalle's. And so we're just currently in the process of monitoring that and working with the forest on a vegetation monitoring plan.
Any additional questions from the council? Seeing none, we're going to go to our blue cards. Travis Hobbs.
I'm Travis Hobbs from Bear Lake, and I'm representing the Cache Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We would strongly support the division's proposals as they're proposed. We had many members that were really excited about this. In regards to the mountain goat management plans, and thank you, Dustin and Darren, for that. I think there's many of us that are really excited to see this, so thank you.
Thank you, Travis. Steve Sorensen.
Steve Sorensen, Hiram, Utah. I'm here at large, as some people would say. I support the division in transplanting goats into these areas. We're letting them expand into these areas. They're already there. I've taken Boy Scouts into the Uintas, and the highlight of their trip is seeing goats. You know, the log books are full of people excited that they've seen goats on their hikes. I think this is a win-win for everybody. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Jeff Nelson.
My name is Jeff Nelson. I live in Draper, Utah. I am the vice president of SCI Utah chapter, Safari Club International, and we just wanted to represent ourselves and also say that we are here to support the division in their proposed management of the mountain goats and the expansion of the Willard Peak unit.
Thank you. That's all the blue cards we have. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to comment? Seeing none, we'll go back to the council. Comments from the council and our motions. Paul.
Just a comment. Dustin, we really appreciate the opportunity as a Forest Service to work with the division as we've gone through the plans and appreciate that pre-look and working with the division and the local staff here. Thank you.
Any additional comments? Motions? John.
I make the motion that we accept the division's mountain goat proposal.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
John Leonard. We have a motion from John Wall and a second from John Leonard to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the mountain goat unit management plans as presented. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll have a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Dustin. I just want to take a minute to talk to you about the several of us will be going off the Regional Advisory Council after next meeting. So there will be an election at the end of the May meeting. I'll be off. John Leonard, Jim Gaskell, Jeffrey Hicks, Paul Cowley, Lynn Nielsen will be off. So those of you that are interested in running for chair and vice chair should exchange emails with the RAC. If you want me to just forward it, if you send it to me and ask me to forward it to everybody, I will. It would just be good to know who wants to be chair and vice chair before we have our election. That's how we've done it in the past. So, having that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move.
Second.
Thank you.